that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape,
well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
And I'm Tony Marinucci, aka Tips with Tony.
And we are the Chimwits. So Justin is, as he says, he's here in physical spirit. He's not feeling well, so he's going to sit this one out, but I'm sure he'll be yelling instructions from the couch.
I'm sure.
yeah, he says he's got a bad headache, and so he's lying down. So Tony, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. A little, I'm a little exhausted myself, but yeah. But not bad. But yeah, it's great. We've got you back on a fairly regular schedule, so
yeah,
this is really
it's
cool.
Been exciting.
So I guess we always like to start with something new, some new research or recent research in fitness. But is there anything new in nutrition or something that's come up recently that would be interesting for people to know that maybe we don't know?
Yeah, rather recently, I would say a few months ago, studies finally proved everything, like what I was hoping they would prove, which is that the egg yolk is actually super nutritious, and just because it has cholesterol, it's not what raises cholesterol in the body.
Okay. Oh, really?
So people who have been thinking like to prevent either high cholesterol or to treat high cholesterol, they were avoiding eggs. Mm-hmm. And even as a dietitian, I would warrant people to like know more than one or two a day or so. But deep down in my soul, I knew. I was like, there's also vitamin D and vitamin B12, and it's just a perfect protein. It's so portioned. And
yeah.
I, you know, it was hard for me to even like say that recommendation. So finally the studies caught up and support my advice to, you know, eat all the eggs you want. Obviously, if you're trying to lose weight, then remember calories are important.
So there's fat. I mean, there's some fat in meat.
Yeah. The yolk has the fat, but it's not what they're mainly concerned about is because it's so condensed. There's about 200 milligrams of cholesterol in the yolk. And that is a high amount of cholesterol if you compare it to other sorts of protein sources of protein. So it was recommended to eliminate or keep eggs to a minimum for someone who had high cholesterol or whatever. But now studies are saying that it's not dietary cholesterol that raises cholesterol. It's saturated fat and trans fat, which is those are like fried foods and processed foods. Just, you know, anything that tastes really good.
So that, I guess that was really my next question. So it's really, it's in see, this is why Justin should be on the podcast.
Justin.
If you didn't hear, he said is trans fat pre or before, pre or post operation. But
trans fat is chemically processed. Trans fat doesn't naturally exist or occur in foods unless you did something to it. So baked goods or hydrogenated oils, where they actually, because they know butter is a saturated fat, so it's bad for us. So they created margarine, which created trans fat, which then is also bad for us.
So you can't win.
So you really can't win.
So yeah, I guess so it's just but in cholesterol in any foods, then that's not the issue as far as developing
It's the preparation, which is why with all proteins, even, you know, a lot of people fear beef. They think it's high fat, and most of the time it usually is. But if you choose a lean source of beef or say if you made a burger with a 99% ground beef, right?
Yeah.
Then that's not going to affect your cholesterol as much as if you had the full fat beef.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, we could do, if you want, we could do another episode of just heart health.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because I could go on and on and on about that.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. I think that's definitely a topic for the future and something that our listeners would love to hear.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about 10 effective ways to lose weight. And I'm actually really excited about this topic because in the past that I've been on, I'm always like, it's dependent on your goals and it's really specific. So this is at least one goal that I think a lot of people share. Mm-hmm. Obviously the approach and what the listeners are going to take from it are going to vary based off of the person. Yeah. But I think that these 10 pointers I have are pretty much can pretty much work for a majority of the listeners.
And then I guess before we go into the list, is the list in any particular order as far as what's most important?
No. Okay. It honestly, after all of everything you hear of all the 10, whatever you're most ready and willing to change and something that you think can actually stick, that's the one thing you want to start with.
Okay.
Yeah.
So don't, if a listener is looking to lose weight, they shouldn't start with all 10.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, that's not real. We know this, right? We talked about that on the fad diet episode. Yeah. Like, you know, even some fads out there are nutrition well-balanced and healthy for you, but it just might not be for you because it might just be too extreme.
Yeah.
So it's all about forming healthy habits over time.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. So I guess what's number one on the list?
So number one, as a dietitian, I can't not recommend vegetables. Number one is eat your veggies. I can't tell you how many people don't eat enough vegetables. And when I say vegetables, I mean the non-starchy vegetables. Okay. So some people sometimes confuse vegetables. They think it's corn and peas. And although those are healthy whole grains and healthy starches, they don't count towards your vegetables.
Oh, really?
They actually count as your carbohydrates.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So when I say eat your veggies, and when a dietitian recommends to make half of your plate non-starchy vegetables, we're referring to like the leafy greens, peppers, tomatoes, onion, cauliflower, broccoli. I mean, just a variety. Mm-hmm. And the more color, the better, because all the colors have different nutrients.
So are there any specific vegetables that are more nutritious or better than others, or is it more important to get the variety?
It's usually you want to get the variety. Unless you're told you're deficient in something, you want the variety. That's really key. And you really, you know, it's kind of hard to have all the different colors on the plate in either one day or one meal. So what I recommend to do for people to do is when they go to the grocery store and they go shopping, look at your cart, and when you're buying vegetables, try to get a variety. At least you're getting it throughout the week. You know, you can't possibly have every purple vegetable and every green vegetable and every orange vegetable, because then you wouldn't have the balance of the other foods in one day. So throughout the week, just try to be mindful that you're getting a bunch of different colors on your plate, and make half of that plate vegetables, and not just at dinner. Like, okay, people don't eat vegetables for lunch, or they don't never consider like doing like a vegetable omelet. Let's say we just talked about eggs. A vegetable omelet is a great, great source of getting your veggies in, but also a really well-balanced breakfast to have. So if you get your veggies, and the reason why they're so important is because not only are they nutrient dense, but they usually have a very high water content and a very low calorie content. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of fiber. So you fill up really quickly, and then you therefore will eat less, and it makes weight loss more achievable and more realistic. If you're hungry, it's going to be really hard for you to say no to like that burger that your friend's having.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know?
So I guess when I go to the diner, do you want a mic, Justin? So when I go to the diner, then when they offer a vegetable, I shouldn't get the corn. Like, the corn doesn't count.
It's still a better alternative to maybe say the French fries. Yeah. Like, it depends what you're swapping it for.
Okay.
But when you try to order, look at your plate. Like, if you're getting a burger, you probably have the bun. So you have your carbohydrates there. That's your starch. If you get the burger without the bun, then you can make the vegetable corn, because that's replacing the bread. And it's actually a better choice, unless they have whole grain bread. The corn is actually better than the refined white bun. And
is there any truth to, like, I've heard people say that if you know, cooking the vegetables will somehow reduce the nutritional content? Like, does it matter if you are cooking it or not?
That's a good question. So actually, when you ask about newest research, there are some studies that are kind of going against what we originally thought, which was as you cook the food, you lose that nutrient quality. So I'm going to go based off of like what dietitians recommend now. And I'm going to say, yes. So the more that you cook it, the more you're going to lose those nutrients. And also you're going to lose that dietary fiber. If your vegetables are cooked to mush, the fiber is what creates bulk in the stomach and slows down the digestive process. So if something's very mushy, you're not going to get that bulk in the stomach.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why eating your vegetables and eating them whole, which once again, we can go on another, I'll do an whole other episode about smoothies and the difference between eating your vegetables and drinking your vegetables. And, you know, there's a lot of that's like a whole side tangent, but try to eat your vegetables whole, right? Like, if try not to juice them all the time.
Yeah. So now, again, one more thing on the vegetables, from a practical sense, is does it make sense then to eat the vegetables first in order to get the full feeling, so that when you eat the maybe not, let's say if I am having a burger, if I have the vegetables first, then I'll be more satiated and I won't want to get the milkshake afterwards?
You are so smart. Yes, exactly. That's what I tell a lot of my clients. That's what I tell a lot of my clients who are trying to get their kids to eat, and they say their kids aren't hungry. they're not eating vegetables. I'll tell them to put the vegetables on the plate first, and then they can eat all that other stuff, because they're going to fill up on the food that obviously that tastes good, that's not really good for them. And then they're not going to have room for the vegetables. Yeah.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, like, eat the veggies first.
I've been thinking that at lunch today, I had, like Wednesday's my quote cheat day where I get like, I'll eat something sweet. So I had like baklava and I ate that first. Like I always eat the sweet stuff first and then I save like the vegetables for last. But yeah. I should change my order.
Because you'll be surprised, honestly, if you do that more often, you may have still had the baklava, you may have had less of it, but more often than not, you probably wouldn't have it. Yeah. Because okay. Or if you say you had like a piece of fruit. So if you're craving sweet, I tell people to like have the fruit first. Mm-hmm. And then if you're still hungry, then have a small portion of say the chocolate or the ice cream or whatever. Because your body obviously wants sweet.
Yeah.
You know, it wants nutrients. It doesn't want junk. It definitely doesn't want junk. It can tell you that. It doesn't feel like it afterwards. If you want junk, it's because your body's deprived of something else.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So now what's the second tip?
So the second tip is drinking more water. A lot of people might think that they're hungry when they're actually just thirsty or dehydrated. Mm-hmm. So drinking water has zero calories. Once again, it can make you feel full. And it's really great for all different purposes. Energy levels, because if you're dehydrated, you're going to feel really tired, feeling full, so for satiety, and just helping with like normal bowel movements and, you know, the normal functions that you need, that your body has to perform throughout the day. It does much better when it's fully hydrated. So on the previous episode, I told you guys that what you want to do is take your weight in pounds and divide it by 2 to know your total fluid ounces of your daily water intake. So because a lot of people think, oh, I have to have 8 cups a day. But if you're really tiny, you might not. And if you're a lot larger in size and you have more muscle, you're going to need a lot more water than just 8 cups a day. Or if you're physically active, you have to add on to that. So, you know, we talked about the urine test last time. Yeah. If your urine's darker in color, then you know you're not hydrated. But water is really important for weight management, because it keeps you in check. If you eat your veggies first and you have a glass of water before you eat, you're going to feel really full and you're probably not going to eat as much. That's why there's actually a lot of studies with soup, vegetable soup, that people, there's plenty of studies that show that people that have like a vegetable broth or like a vegetable soup first usually eat less calories throughout their entire meal.
Yeah. Okay.
And they are more successful with weight loss.
Yeah. So, and then is there, I know we did talk about it. I guess it'd be good if you're listening and you want to know a little bit more about the water. We did talk good deal about it in the last episode with you on. Is there a specific amount? I'll separate that, because I think, you know, if you exercise, there's some strategies. But does it matter where, like if you're getting water, let's say from juice or from smoothies, does that count towards your water, or like does it divide it in half? Like if you have a liter of soda, does that count like as half of your water intake?
Yeah.
Like how does that work?
So technically, you know, when you're calculating those are technically your fluid needs, not your water needs.
Okay.
So technically, yes, you get water. You get water from even like your leafy green vegetables, your citrus fruits, watermelon, like certain things like that obviously have a higher water content. That's why fruits and vegetables are so good too, because if you're not drinking enough water, you can get it through there. So it counts, it contributes, but I still recommend it's easier to just take your body weight divided by 2, and that's what your daily water intake is.
Got it.
Yeah.
Now what? Because I'd want to stop somebody from saying, "Oh, great! Now I can drink. You know, fruit juice."
And that that's obviously going to affect your body in a much different way. The purpose of drinking water is because it's calorie free and sugar free, and you're trying to lose weight. It's like one less thing that you have to calculate into your calories.
Yeah.
And it's also hydration is going to give you energy. Sweetened beverages are going to give you energy initially, but obviously you're going to get the crash later. Yeah. Not to mention, it puts you at risk for, you know, diabetes and cavities and just not feeling hot.
All right. Yeah. So now what's the third?
So number 3 is actually eating more and not less, but obviously more of the healthy stuff.
Okay.
So I think a lot of people think of dieting as restriction, and they think they have to barely eat anything and be starving and just eliminate all these different food groups. When in actuality, you should be eating more fruit, more vegetables, more water, more whole grains, more lean proteins, and, you know, finding that balance. And I think initially, it obviously depends on the stage at which the person is trying to lose the weight, but I usually start people off with just try to have as much like whole foods, natural foods as you possibly can, and eliminate the processed stuff for a little bit. And don't worry about calories. Don't worry about portions. Naturally, your body and your metabolism will reset, and it will tell you when you're full because you're eating the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an example where just the other day, I was talking to one of my clients about the benefits of avocados and how you can incorporate them. You can put it on toast. You can put it in a salad. You can make a guacamole. You know, there's so many ways. And the avocado is so great. And she's like, yeah, but it's so many calories. Mm. I was like, well, it is. But, you know, what about, you know, when you calculate the calories from the ice cream that you're having, you know, at night, it's definitely a significant more. A lot more calories, and it's not really providing your body with any other types of nutrition.
Yeah.
And then we kind of ended the talk with, what's the difference between when you eat, not that I'm encouraging everyone to eat an entire avocado, because as you know, there's all about balance, but if you eat an entire avocado, it'd be like 350 calories, right? If you eat an entire pint of ice cream, it's about 2000 calories. But regardless, even if you had the 350 calories worth of the ice cream, you would feel so much more full and satisfied from that entire avocado than you would from that ice cream. So mm-hmm. later on, you probably would eat less naturally because you're providing your body with the food that it needs and the nutrients it needs and the dietary fiber that is so high in avocados. So like that's where I usually use that as an effective strategy at first. So people then can also gain that confidence. Like, I can do this. Like if you're restricting yourself, you can't do something for a long period of time. Yeah. You feel you're like, okay, this is not sustainable. But if I tell you, you can have this, you can have that. A lot of people are actually relieved when they come to see me or speak with me, because working with a dietitian, we usually tell you what you can have. We don't tell you what you can't have.
Yeah.
You know?
So this is going to kind of subvert the next one on the list, I think. But
yeah,
does that make calorie counting ineffective or overrated?
So I put both on the list because it depends on your stage. Initially, just start if you're brand new to kind of weight loss and just eating healthy and you have a lot of poor eating habits, then you want to just go with the whole foods method and just focus on that first. Once you have that down, then you want to, if you want to work on like portion control and calories in versus calories out. Now, initially though, you won't have to worry about that because like I said, naturally by eating the healthier food options, your body will regulate itself. It's already doing something different. You know, you're probably naturally, because you're adding more fruits and vegetables, you're naturally cutting out that stuff that has those empty calories that might be contributing to you being overweight. So naturally you should still lose the weight that way. But then as you get closer to your goal weight, it becomes a lot more challenging and a lot harder to lose the weight. So that's when you do have to get nitpicky and you do have to then think, okay, you know, an avocado, super healthy for me. But you know, an entire avocado is about 350 calories, depending on the size. You know, my meal's about 500 calories. Like, where does that kind of leave me if I want to have three meals a day and snacks in between? And like, you know, should I really be, you know, if you just kind of start to focus on where you're getting your calories in, then you can modify them and focus on losing that weight a little bit better when you're counting the calories.
So now if someone's looking to lose weight, I've always heard like, if you want to lose a pound a week, you should be at about a 500 calorie deficit. Is that about like
per day?
Yeah. Compared to what you're, kind of a daily caloric expenditure is. So is that about right? Like, do you want to be at about a deficit of 500? Has research changed on that?
Yeah, that is, once again, we don't know. Like, there's so many conflicting studies. Actually, something I've been wanting to take the time to do a little extra research on, because even I get confused, because you can have someone that has a less of a deficit and still lose an effective, like a good amount of weight, or they could be doing more than that and still not losing weight. So I think there's obviously other factors involved, like hormones and stress and sleep and all that stuff that definitely plays a role. So Yeah, I don't think there's like a real, but that's a general estimate. So yeah. Either way, that is how I estimate with my clients. Yeah. You know, I'll calculate their calorie needs, and then I'll say, okay, how fast, what pace do you want to lose this weight? I usually recommend, you know, no more than 1 to 2 pounds per week.
Yeah.
Or is that a good goal for you, or would you prefer less? Would you want slower? And then based off of that, I'll do the calorie adjustments per day. And like you said, it's about 3,500 calories is equivalent to a pound of weight loss. So you could either do a 500 calorie deficit in food, or you could do like a 250 calorie deficit in food per day, and then an additional 250 calories of exercise.
Okay.
You know, so like it doesn't always have to be food that's controlled. It can be physical activity, but once again, it's dependent on the person. If are they willing to increase their physical activity level, or would they prefer to do it through food? You know, once again, it's up to the person.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing some research myself just on metabolism and things that affect it. And it's pretty crazy, like, what does affect your metabolism. And I mean, even something like lack of sleep has a significant effect
on it. And stress. Well, because stress, I think, and I'm kind of jumping a little bit, but one of the other things that will help is like when you're stressed out, your body releases cortisol. Mm-hmm. The higher your cortisol levels are, the harder it is for your body to lose weight. Mm-hmm. So if you're not sleeping properly and you're stressed out, you know, that's all going to contribute.
Oh yeah,
to
well,
it.
That's number five.
But
right?
is it five? Yeah. Did I skip? Oh, perfect.
All right,
okay.
So I guess we can talk about that. So sleep. How does sleep help you?
Yeah.
Lose
well, because think about it. If you're tired, first of all, I guess we could associate this with like when you're hungover, mm-hmm. you feel like crap, yeah. and you're not really thinking, and you like you just like have anything that's gonna make you feel better. When you're tired, it's like the same groggy hungover feeling, mm-hmm. where you're just like, all right, what I'm gonna take, what I need, bacon, egg and cheese, like, yeah. that's gonna make me feel better. Or like I just need maybe like a Red Bull to get me up and going. I need some sugar.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about when you're tired and you're not sleeping properly, you're probably going to look for foods that are high in sugar or high in fat or just something that's going to make you feel better or give you that boost of energy.
Yeah.
So, because you have to remember that calories is a unit for energy. So naturally your body is going to look for calories or look for energy. So it's probably going to take in more even subconsciously than if you were well rested.
Yeah.
Also thinking about when you're tired or sleep deprived, you're probably less likely to be more physically active, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't have a plan to go to the gym, you're probably not likely to take the stairs. You're going to take the elevator. Like even those little things that really do add up.
Yeah.
You'll be less likely to because you're just exhausted.
So how much sleep should somebody get per day?
So usually, and people are always shocked when I say this, but on average, an adult should be getting anywhere from 7 to 9 hours of sleep a day. And if you're per night, and if you're physically active, then you're going to need more to that for your muscle recovery.
So now does napping count towards those?
Yes.
So if I get, let's say, let's say if I got 6 hours of sleep and then I napped for an hour a day, does that count as 7 hours a day?
Yes.
Okay.
It's within the 24 hours.
Really? And now, and it's not, you can't make up sleep. Like if I go a week where I'm sleep deprived and then I get like 13 hours of sleep on Sunday, like that doesn't make up for the lack of sleep during the week. Okay. So
no, but I think I have read before, and I'm not a sleep expert by any means, but I have read before that you can make up for the lack of sleep like within the 24 to 48 hours, I believe. So like you said, like if you got a bad night's sleep before and you take a nap, it can make up for that lack of sleep from the night before. Mm-hmm. But after that period, you're just kind of lost it.
And does it, if you have a rough night of sleep, let's say you're up a lot throughout the night, like does that affect, you know, the
because you're never really getting to what is that REM sleep cycle. You're never really fully rested, and you feel agitated, and you know, you're not gonna, once again, you're not gonna get all the rest you need to be you at your peak.
So now what's number six? And actually I have a couple questions based on that, but
so number six, it's very general, but there are so many things that can fit into this category, which is getting rid of unhealthy habits. And I said like skipping meals or dining out to eat and like choosing, when I mean like dining out to eat, I mean like fast food places that don't, and you're not choosing the best choices. But even if you go to a restaurant like 5 days a week and you get the the healthiest thing on the menu, sometimes you don't know how they're preparing it. So controlling what you put in your food is really important. Other unhealthy habits are obviously like smoking cigarettes and drinking excessively. I mean, those are things that for whatever reason, like I even know like the biggest fitness enthusiasts still like do things that like, it's almost like they feel like it negates like the fact that they eat healthy regularly and exercise regularly, like they can still binge drink on weekends and smoke cigarettes. And no, it doesn't negate those, those, you know, you have to get rid of all, you have to get rid of those unhealthy habits, because whether you exercise or not, if you smoke cigarettes, it's just as bad.
Yeah.
Like, so, and I have a lot of clients currently that, believe it or not, smoke cigarettes, and I try to encourage them to, you know, quit and then lose the weight, because if anything, you know, what's the point of losing weight and then you get a, you know, an illness caused from smoking cigarettes, right? So yeah, poor like lifestyle choices, and that's kind of like, I'm hoping that that's taken care of when we're talking about this, because that's obviously not going to help and contribute to your overall health in any way.
A client that just reminded me of this guy. And this isn't just one person. I just remember, for whatever reason, I remember him saying it, but many people have said things similar, but it's kind of like, I had a bacon cheeseburger and fries last night, but I had a salad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like as if the salad somehow is, like, negates the bacon cheeseburger and fries. And it was probably a bad salad with dressing.
Yeah, but, and cheese.
You know, like and, just iceberg lettuce and some dressing. But,
did I tell you guys the time where I don't know if I told you guys, I walked into, I was just like walking by the break room of where I work, and I took a look at this person's salad they were eating. It was iceberg lettuce and a plate of ranch. Like, I'm not even kidding you. The thing was ranch.
It
was all ranch. And I was like, oh my gosh, now she's going to come and tell me that she had a salad for lunch. Like, this way you have to ask triple questions.
Yeah, no, it's so true. So now, so you mentioned like skipping meals.
Yeah.
So I've heard conflicting things. I think I always kind of thought that kind of like 6 meals a day thing is the way to do it. It boosts the metabolism. But is that true? Like, does eating more meals have an effect on the metabolism? Because then I've read conflicting things that say that it doesn't really have an effect as long as you're eating the same amount of calories.
Yeah. So that is pretty much right. Like, no matter, at the end of the day, that calories in, calories out really does count. Of course, we want healthy foods first, but calories in, calories out is what really will help you to achieve that weight loss. But being said, the strategy of 3 meals a day and snacking in between makes that goal a lot more achievable. Because if you're constantly, or not constantly, it's not, but like every 2 to 3 to maybe 4 hours having something to eat, you're more likely to be able to stick to a smaller portion and stay within the calories that you need. Mm-hmm. And you're going to feel full, and you're going to naturally be able to tell your body's going to regulate itself and say, okay, I'm hungry. This is what keeps me full for about an hour or two. Okay, now that was my snack. Now I have my meal. Okay, this is what's going to keep me full until the next 3 to 4 hours when I have my other snack that's just going to hold me off to dinner. So like, you're more likely to actually stay within your calorie needs when it's not so much about the metabolism.
Yeah.
As I think a lot of people associate that the reason is to pick up the metabolism, which it is when at the initial beginning, like that's why breakfast is really important.
Yeah.
Because once you start the metabolism, it will continue to move. So you always have to get it started. Once it's started, then having the controlled amount of calories throughout the day is what's really important. But it tends to be much easier to achieve to stay within your calorie needs when you're eating frequent small meals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have clients that are the opposite, that they don't, you know, they find that they overeat that much because it's like food's always on their mind. And so then, you know, you work with them. But I find that the 3 meals a day and the snacks in between usually works with most of my clients. It's hard with some schedules.
Yeah.
But if they can make it work, then they tend to be more successful that way.
And I do feel like it takes some planning, because it's easy to underestimate how many calories you're having. If you're having a lot of small things, I think we naturally do that. If you're not kind
that's
of cognizant
so
of how many calories you're taking in, it's easy to kind of say, I'm having a bunch of smaller things, and each individual thing doesn't seem like that much, but maybe collectively it adds up to something that is beyond your needs, especially, I guess, if you have a very low calorie kind of, if your diet is, if you're trying to lose weight and you're at 15 or 1800 yeah. calories, that adds up really fast.
Absolutely. That's why it's really important to know what you're taking in and to track your food, which kind of leads me, to the next one really, mm-hmm. which the next tip is, using like measuring your food. You don't have to get the scale out, you know, you don't have to use measuring cups. I recommend that initially just so you can get a visual and understand, because that frustration that people come to me with is I eat really healthy but I can't lose weight and I don't understand why, and then I go home and tell them to measure even the Cheerios that are super healthy. Yeah. Like measure the Cheerios, measure the milk. And when they start to do that, they're actually cutting back from like a 700 calorie breakfast to a 400 calorie breakfast just by realizing that they were over consuming their calories. So once again, they were choosing healthy choices, but now they're tracking it. So using those measuring cups or your protein, for example, so many people are over consuming protein and because they think that like carbs are bad and they have to eat all the protein. And so they'll like have like four pieces of chicken. And when you calculate that out, that's like 450 calories. I don't know how it's prepared. That's like me being generous. But like, so like of just chicken, you know what I mean? Like you didn't have the rest of the meal yet. So you have to remember too, like measuring, you know, measuring so you know your calories, the protein and everything like that is really, really important. And using like little snack bags. So almonds or peanuts, you know, those are great healthy snacks, right? Mm-hmm. But they're calorically dense. They're heart healthy fats, but a quarter of a cup of almonds is 170 calories.
Yeah.
A quarter of a cup of peanuts is about 200 calories. A quarter of a cup is like what fits in like a quarter of my hand.
Yeah.
It's not of the palm of my hand. Like it's not that much. And I think people need to visually be able to see the difference. Mm-hmm. So that way they can see like the little changes actually will make them successful.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to use scales or measuring cups just initially in the beginning, or portion like little baggies, or buy things that are already portioned. Sometimes they're more expensive, but it sometimes is worth buying the stuff that's already done for you if you don't think you're actually going to go home and, you know, get the big bag of almonds and then put them in little Ziplocs yourself. Just buy the ones that are the 100 calorie pack ones. They're already done for you.
Makes sense.
So, also fun fact, you can use your hand to measure a lot of things.
Okay. How?
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't have measuring cups and you don't have what did Justin say?
You can ignore Justin.
So, and the reason why I love using hands for measurement is because we all have different size hands because we all have different calorie needs, right? Mm-hmm. And we all require a different amount of protein and a different amount of starches. And it's usually based off of like our height and our weight and our size, right? So if you think about like a child, their hands are much smaller compared to say like, you know, LeBron James, he needs a lot more calories and a lot more protein because he's a lot larger than a child, right? Yeah. So using your hand is a really useful tool. You can, like for proteins, I think this is pretty well known, to use looking at the palm of your hand, not your fingers, just your palm. Mm-hmm. That should be about the size of the protein. So like chicken or fish. And then you want it to be about like a deck of cards thick. So no more than that. And then that's like a good way to know if you don't have a scale that you're having a decent size portion of protein. When it comes to your starches, it's about a fist size is equivalent to about a cup.
Okay.
So that's usually a half a cup to a cup is depending on the food is usually about one serving. So but either way, you know that a fist size looking at your fist is about one cup of your grains. Your thumb is a tablespoon. Your entire thumb is a tablespoon. So like peanut butter, that's an easy one. People can go over.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I struggle with that one hard. but it's your thumb is about a tablespoon. And then like just your thumbnail is about a teaspoon. So something else like oils, like olive oil, as great as it is, you know, a teaspoon of olive oil is the size of your thumbnail like that. And that's about like, you know, I think, oh God, it depends on the oils, but they're like around 100 calories for like a teaspoon of oil.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to think about that stuff.
What about the vegetables?
Vegetables. Well, so vegetables is like, once again, your fist size is about a cup.
Yeah.
So with vegetables, you want to try to, with your dinner plate, to have about like two fistfuls of vegetables,
okay,
a fistful of your starch, a palm size of your protein. And then when it comes to things like dairy, if it's like a cheese stick, it'd be about like the size of your pointer finger. you know, that's about like an ounce or an ounce and a half, or like, yeah, if we're using our hands still. So, you know, it's a useful tool.
Are there any charts online? That's actually kind of cool. So there are charts we'll look it up and try to add it in the show notes, because that's kind of cool to like, to have a way to visualize your, what you're eating at dinner. Because I was thinking, you know, I'm thinking even for me, like I could not measure foods. I'm just too lazy to do it. But that might be fun. And that's actually kind of a fun almost game to play. Like, okay, am I getting, you know, how am I getting the right foods? Or especially like when I go to, that would be great when I go to salad bars. Because I way overeat when I go to a salad bar. I just load my plate. And I always feel really guilty because, you know how much it is per pound. And I always go well over like whatever the price per pound is. And okay, this can't be good.
Have you ever gone to Whole Foods and think you're going in there for like a light salad?
Not good at all.
I mean, not that it's hard to spend a lot of money there, but when I go to there, I go there.
Yeah.
That is my vacation.
Yeah. The other day I went there and just to get like a, go to the salad bar, I was hungry. Yeah. And yeah, it's like you come out and it's like, I spent like a week's worth on food for a salad bar.
Seriously.
All right. So, what's next? So now we're up to eight. So what's number eight?
Yeah. So number eight is getting some sort, this is more not even so related to food. This is more related to physical activity. So if part of your goals, if say you don't want to go lower than that, say 1800 calories is your goal, calorie intake. But you need a more of a deficit to achieve weight loss and you rather do it through physical activity. Getting something like, like a Fitbit or just the iPhones have like the health app, or just a pedometer, like go old school. Like, you know, obviously the more advanced and more upgraded tracking device you have, it's probably going to motivate you a little bit more. And because it can track other things.
Yeah.
But, you know, basic things like tracking your steps. I know that, you know, the general recommendation just for like healthy, active lifestyle is a minimum of 10,000 steps a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we are usually very sedentary. A lot of Americans are sitting a lot and their commute to work and back and forth. And they usually don't have that opportunity. So having that goal of 10,000 steps a day and looking at the number and knowing, okay, I've been averaging about 7,000. Where can I fit in that extra 3,000? You might be more apt to do it when you know where you're at, type of thing. They're also great because other things like, this is kind of like eight and nine are kind of tied in together, which is basically like the food diary aspect. So you have something that's tracking your physical activity, and then you also want something that's tracking your food intake. And some of them do it together. So like Fitbit, you can do your calorie needs, and then you could also do you can even it even tells you what your blood pressure is, and your heart rate is, and you know, your calories that you're burning. And it's just a motivating factor, I think. And you can even do challenges with other people. But you know, with those, you have to caution with certain things, because when you're tracking something like say MyFitnessPal and you're putting in your calorie needs, MyFitnessPal is a good database. It has like a broad amount of different options, but you have to remember sometimes people are putting those in, and that's like what you were saying before, like you don't really know what grilled chicken, how many calories there is and how it's prepared. Like you could put that in and, you know, we can calculate it, but you could be wrong. And so now here I am thinking I'm having 200 calories worth of grilled chicken, but the way that I prepared or my sister prepared it, I'm actually having 500 calories of grilled chicken. And then it's like, oh, wait, how am I not losing weight?
Yeah.
So you have to be mindful of that, that the reason why I encourage people to track is just to be mindful.
Yeah.
And to get an idea of what they're taking in, and that way I can look at it and make modifications to it. But take a lot of that, you know, don't take that stuff to heart, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not 100% accurate, but it gives you something to work towards. It motivates you, and it gives you at least a general idea, and it helps you see things that also too, when you have to write things down, you're like, oh, maybe I don't need that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're about to go grab the chocolate chip cookies and then you're like, wait, how many, did I eat my fruits and vegetables yet? Like, do I have enough calories? Like, is this going to put me on track with my goals? And then you're like, maybe I don't need
it. It's kind of, I feel like it works as an accountability strategy too. Cause it's almost like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Even if you're eating the cookie, if you don't know how many calories, it somehow it doesn't count in a weird way.
Yeah.
Now, are there, as far as keeping track, is there any way that's most effective? Should you be doing it at the end of the day, on the weekend? Mm-hmm. Like, how? What's the best way to track it? In a way that I guess both is effective for you as the person reading it, mm-hmm. but also effective for the person considering they may not have time or they may not like it. Like, what's the best way to go about
it? It's really up to the person. So some people prefer like handwriting it in a journal. Other people mm-hmm. prefer like a mobile app. Some very rare, but some people will do it on the computer. But I think that if you have the mobile app, I think the sooner you do it, the better. Or if you're writing it down, some people will write it afterwards. And usually that's the step I go with people initially, is after you write it down. So that way it's more for me to see and then for you to see, you know. But at first, like, my motto is, if you can track it, you can change it. Mm-hmm. So just write it down, let's see your patterns and then work with it. Mm-hmm. But then what I'll do as another, like, an effective strategy for weight loss is I'll actually tell them to write their foods before they have it, mm-hmm. because then that will actually make them think consciously and plan ahead. Okay. And they're more likely to stick to that food choice because they decided on it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I kind of use both depending on the person.
Got it. So now, what is the last one? So you have, this is number 10.
So number 10 is seek out a nutrition professional. Mm-hmm. You know, registered dietitians are credentialed. There are other people that have a nutrition background, but it's not always guaranteed. So if you want me to make sure you're seeing a credible registered dietitian or nutrition professional, you can always like email us just to make sure. Mm-hmm. But make sure that you have some, you know, have people. That's why you go to professionals to look at your thing. You can't do everything. I think everybody wants to like do things on their own, mm-hmm. and it's a great, great mindset. But initially, you don't need the dietitian the rest of your life. Like, you just, in the beginning, it's like working with a personal trainer. Some people choose to continue with them for that motivating factor to learn new things, or other people start with a personal trainer just to learn the foundation and, you know, just get started. And, you know, so it's really up to you. But either way, you go to that professional because there's a lack of knowledge that you have that you need to kind of fill the gaps and to try and figure it out by just looking it up on the internet. And you're just only going to get yourself more confused and probably bring you further away from your goal than actually bring you closer to it. So it doesn't hurt to help and ask.
Yeah. And getting a professional seems to help you sift through all the misinformation. Exactly. There's so much misinformation out there, both when it comes to health and fitness and nutrition, that it's really easy to get lost. And then you go in thinking, all right, I'm going to figure this out. And then an hour on Google and you're more confused than when you started. So getting somebody that really knows what they're talking about and is professional makes a lot of sense. And you're right. Like, some people are going to want to see you ongoing and others may just want one or two sessions, but mm-hmm. it does make sense as a starting point. So anything else that you have to share on this, on these topics?
Just want to kind of, we talked about it in the very beginning, but of all these 10 topics, if there's something that really shouts out at you that you're ready to change, then just go for it and do it. You know, if this is very overwhelming for you, just pick one. You don't have to do all 10. Just do it. Oh my god.
So again, Justin asked, what about amputation? Don't think that's an effective strategy. Oh, although I did read about people who kind of want to amputate limbs. I don't understand it, but they have a desire to amputate limbs. They find it attractive or whatever, but there's a kind of, I don't know, subculture or group people that feel that way. I don't know if they actually act on it, but anyway, I guess enough of that tangent. Wow. Thank you, Justin.
I would hope they don't act on it. Oh my god.
So I guess before we close, I have an interesting question. So the next Justin and I were supposed to record today, but he didn't feel well. But I was going to tell a story of some awful advice I heard a trainer give the other day, which I will save for that podcast. But what's the worst advice? So I'm sure you hear people give bad advice, whether maybe it's other registered dietitians, maybe it's from other health professionals who give advice, or maybe it's just a random person you hear give advice. Whatever mm-hmm. the case is, if you can think of, and I know I'm kind of catching you on the spot, what's the worst nutrition advice you've heard?
Okay, so this is super new, hot off the press, and I didn't even talk to the person about it because I was really upset. All right, I'm just gonna say it anyways. So a family member of mine has diabetes, mm-hmm. They basically asked me a question. Basically, the doctor told them that because they have diabetes and their hemoglobin A1C, which tracks your diabetes and tells you if you're in a good range or a bad range, it was high. Okay. Mm. Very, very high. Dangerous, whatever. Not enough to go to the hospital, but really needs this. He needs to change his eating habits or start taking medication. The doctor told him to drink muscle milk.
That was the advice. That was the advice. Muscle milk. Wow.
You don't understand. And I'm okay. It's not going to hurt him. Yeah. Muscle milk is higher in protein. There's very little carbs, so like it's fine. But really though,
that was the wow. Did he at least recommend a registered dietitian?
No, luckily my family knows I'm a dietitian, yeah. But their question to me wasn't, how can you help him, blah, blah, blah. Their question to me was, does the milk, muscle milk need to be refrigerated or not? That was my question.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
yeah, right. It's like muscle milk is finding their way into like the pharmaceutical industry now. Like they're stopping doctors. That's pretty bad. But
yeah, I will say to the defense of the doctor, I do know like the person that he was the patient is very non-compliant. So okay. if that's the only thing we can do, then that's fine. But I wish that I could talk to the doctor and understand if that's what he knew he was saying.
See,
rather than saying you should see a registered dietitian, you want to, most doctors, honestly, they don't have, they took like one nutrition course. Yeah. So I don't even expect them to give the nutrition advice.
Yeah.
Just refer to the dietitian. Some of them will say, limit some of the carbohydrates, and that's fine initially if their hemoglobin A1C is very high.
Yeah.
But working with a dietitian, you learn to incorporate the carbs at a consistent rate and using whole grains and blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to get into that. But it was just something that I was just like, well, that's not really, if anything, and I don't know what the number was, but if anything, then he should be on medication.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's
muscle milk's not going to heal a hemoglobin A1C of, say, 9.
Yeah. So it's funny because we hold doctors in a high regard, as they should be. They go through a ton of school, a lot of education to get to where they are. But you forget, it's like they get limited nutrition, limited fitness. So it's like unless they actively seek it out, they know less than your average person in many cases. And it's funny because I know some doctors who have immense knowledge when it comes to fitness. I've also heard from clients or even doctors that I've trained that have like such a limited knowledge base that sometimes just the being a doctor doesn't maybe give them the authority to talk fitness and nutrition. You really kind of have to find out what else they know. And that's, I know doctors that have great knowledge in those areas, but I know some that have that have given some of the worst fitness advice imaginable to clients. So it's like, it's just interesting because you're going to take that advice. Most people, you're going
to
take the advice.
Of course, you look up to them. Yes, absolutely. And they do have an education and a background and they're very smart in their field.
Yeah.
And some of them, like you said, because they have a science background, they know to like look towards the science and they know to go to credible resources. So some are actually very intelligent when it comes to nutrition and fitness, but then others just don't know or didn't research it or just assume,
Yeah, no, I've heard some weird advice from clients. And I was like, because then my response is like, if somebody's injured, although I've kind of changed it a bit, but my response was like, if you're hurt, go to a doctor. But it's more, you've got a very, what kind of doctor is important, because just going to, because I've heard, I had somebody who had a back issue that, again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to diagnose it, but I could tell from what he was telling me, I had a pretty clear idea of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I went to the doctor and he just said it was, I forget what it was, but it was something just benign that the doctor thought he shouldn't worry about. I was like, I don't know about that. Maybe you should go, go to an orthopedist or go to somebody who specializes in that. And sure enough, he went, and it was pretty, not exactly, but pretty close to what I thought the problem was. Mm-hmm. Was it? So it's, it's one of those things that you need to kind of know what the specialization is as well, what they know, because sometimes you will get bad advice that could make an injury worse.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why people do have specialties, because it's impossible to know everything about the human body. And being a doctor, there's a lot of different specialties, and even dietitians, there's people that specialize in certain areas because there's just so much information to know. It's hard to be, you can't be a, what is it? Like jack of all trades.
Yeah, exactly. Really, yeah. It's tough. All right. Well, that was great. So we got a lot of great info today. So where can people find you or keep in touch with what's going on with you?
Yep. So I have my website, tipswithtony.com, that I don't update as frequently, but I'm going to try to do it more. So you can get me at tipswithtony.com. But if you want to see me like daily updates, you go to my Instagram at tips_with_Tony and my Twitter and my Facebook page.
Cool. And as usual, you can find all of our stuff at thegymwits.com. That you'll find all of our social media. And that is it. So I'm Ryan George.
And I'm Tony Maramucci, a.k.a. Tips with Tony.
And we are the Gymwits.